Good morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with LaRon Landis. Patty Fink, who's down in New Orleans taking care of her father-in-law, will be back with us next week. So we're looking forward to seeing Patty again. Our guest today is Tam O'Shaughnessy. She's co-founder and CEO of Sally Ride Science. She's also a former tennis pro. We'll talk to her about that. Her new book is Sally Ride, a photobiography of America's pioneering woman in space. She's also Sally Ride's partner. Welcome, Tam.
Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you. Your publicist sent me the book, and I said, oh, yes, I want her. I haven't known how to get in touch with you. I've been wanting to get in touch with you and have you on since Sally passed away. Let's just talk about that a little bit. Nobody knew Sally was gay, did they?
Well, Sally and I were open with our family and close friends. But outside that little protective circle, you're right, nobody, our business colleagues and the world at large did not know she was gay. And we were both, private about it and, quite frankly, a little bit afraid to be completely open.
Mm-hmm. Totally understandable.
Now, in reading the book, I found somebody else who was gay. Bear Ride is Sally's sister. And in the back, you said that she's married to
Susan
somebody.
Craig.
So her sister is gay, too.
Yes.
Okay, so that family just has a weird way of coming out.
Well, actually, Bear has been Bear was married for about 20 years and has two lovely kids who now have their own families.
Mm-hmm.
And Bear sort of found out, later in life that she actually, was also attracted to women, and she fell head over heels with Susan Craig. And, they're married now and have been living, happily together for a long time. But it is, interesting that Sally and her sister were both gay.
And the way she did come out, Sally, and the way we found out now about Bear, in an odd way, that's the way it should be. It should just be this kind of, and she's married to her, and he's married to him, and it's not a big deal. It should be that way.
Right.
I actually agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
If a person's straight, they don't have to say, oh, by the way, I'm straight.
Right.
But having said that, I am so happy that I am living openly gay.
Mm-hmm.
And with all the changes that have happened the last, 5 or so years in particular, I know the gay community's been working on this stuff for decades and decades.
Mm-hmm.
But I wish Sally was around to enjoy just not having to hide that part of herself and just be totally open. I just think it's been such a lovely experience for me, and I'm kind of a different person in
mm-hmm.
subtle ways.
And Tam, I know Sally passed away before marriage equality became legal nationwide, but there were a few spots available. Did you all ever tie the knot?
We did not. We quite frankly, we were together for 27 years as a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about, especially when Bear was starting to get interested in in marriage and so on. And Sally and I talked about it. And we both kind of had this attitude that it was a piece of paper and it didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, now I'm like, why did I ever think that? Of course it matters.
Mm-hmm.
It's significant expression, and it's a very significant piece of paper, I can't think of the words, but
it has a lot of legal importance.
Well, legal, that's true too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it is making this statement also that we are a couple, we are a family.
Yes. Yes. And then all of the legal rights that go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Sally and I did, when we found out that she had pancreatic cancer in 2011, that completely changed how open we were with people we didn't know very well. So her doctors, the nurses, the other, you know, we were just much more affectionate in public. And we also became domestic partners because, you know, and California had closed off the marriage loop.
Mm-hmm.
I think we would have completely considered that, too, because, you know, when someone you love becomes ill, you want to be as close to them in every possible way you can for as long as you can.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you just don't want to think when you're going into a hospital and some of the worst stuff could happen. Is the staff going to recognize that I do have a right to be just sitting at that bedside?
Yes, absolutely.
Did you ever have any problem like that at all?
We didn't because, I was able to say, Sally was able to say, she's my partner. We're mm-hmm. domestic, you know, certified domestic hens,
okay.
or partners.
Yeah. last year, my partner went into the hospital, and our doctor is certified at, let's just say the Baptist Hospital here in town. Everybody will know which one I mean. And the one thing that went through my mind, okay, he's going in through emergency. Are they going to question who I am? When he's in recovery, are they going to question who I am? And to their credit, absolutely nobody did. But I shouldn't have had to even think about that. I should have just been there thinking about his recovery.
Yes, so, of course. It's just this added...
it's an added level of stress. And
Can you talk a little bit about NASA, if you could? Those of us who aren't, obviously, we're not scientists or... astronauts, we don't know. But when I think of NASA, I don't think of a conservative place. I don't think of any area or branch of science as really being conservative. But is it? What do you know of it?
Well, I think, I think NASA, just like the rest of the country and the world, has gone through, different eras, philosophy over time. And I think NASA is actually conservative, or maybe the better way to say it is they're traditional.
Mm-hmm.
And they're
Okay.
When Sally applied in 1977, and this was in your book, you wrote that women were allowed to apply. And just the concept that somebody would be allowed to apply, isn't that interesting?
It is actually, blacks and Hispanics were allowed to apply mm-hmm. also. So the world was changing at that time for the better. But I think that, NASA had to change the culture slowly over time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they've done a terrific job. And, one expression of that is that Bear and I actually gave a talk during Gay Pride Week at NASA in Houston at the Johnson Space Center. And we were just, it was just wonderful mm-hmm. to be. And Sally would have just been amazed.
Oh, that's awesome.
Out at NASA marched in the Houston Pride Parade this year. I just saw them. They were up here at – we had the big Out and Equal conference in Dallas this week, and they were represented there recruiting.
Nice.
So, yeah. So big change.
Times have changed.
When women were allowed to apply, Sally was accepted on page 82. There are some real interesting statistics, Laurent. Laurent has the copy of the book, and he is too far from me now in our new studio to hand the book to me.
Okay, here we go. The number of applications that NASA received back during the time was over 8,000.
Mm-hmm.
The number of applicants from women was 1,251. The number of finalists was 208. The number of female finalists was 21. And out of all of that, only 6 women were chosen.
Right.
So she was pretty sharp to make it through all that.
It's true, mm-hmm. and the numbers towards equity have certainly improved a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
It would be lovely to see NASA keeping track of each new class of astronauts. The ethnic and, the background and also LGBTQ mm-hmm. issues, because at the moment, Sally is the one and only openly gay,
mm-hmm.
former astronaut.
In reading your book, some of the things I found interesting about her, of course, she was the first woman in space from the United States. There were two Russians who had flown earlier. Mm-hmm. But she was also, she remains the youngest person to fly into space.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I think it takes a while to, you know, once you're selected, it just takes a while for training and then to be assigned a special, Sally lucked out and was assigned to help design and test the robotic arm. And that turned out to be a very plum assignment because it was such an important, and it still is a crucial space tool, you know, that's now on the International Space Station.
But that the thing is, she designed it.
She helped design it with engineers.
With engineers, sure, but she was instrumental in creating it.
Yes.
You know, and it's interesting. When you think of astronaut names that we know, the original Mercury 7, you know, we remember Buzz Aldrin, John Glenn, Neil Armstrong landed on the moon, and then Sally Ride. And I'll bet if you asked the general public, name some more astronauts, they couldn't. Isn't that interesting how well-known she is? How comfortable was she with that?
You know, over the years, she learned how to cope with it. And actually, you know, she was so proud of being America's first woman in space. She loved it. But she really was an introvert. And having people always notice her. You know, I remember her telling me that, you know, she'd go for a run in her neighborhood after the first launch in June of 1983, which, by the way, kind of coincides with your with Lambda Radio.
That's
it's
right.
Kind of like,
it does.
Yeah.
When we went on the air.
Yeah, it's kind of a neat happenstance.
Uh-huh. Oh, I love it. A listener who done her homework. Love it.
It's a very cool radio station. You guys have done great work.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm proud to be on radio with you.
Good.
But Sally, you know, at first it was just she realized that, giving speaking engagements and going to schools and then being recognized in the grocery store and on the street and have people, you know, wanting to touch her and shake her hand and take pictures with her, it started to make her nervous and unsettle her. So she kind of had to learn to take time in between public events and just being around a lot of people and kind of take care of herself, have some quiet time. But, she loved talking to kids and enjoyed, the honor that she was America's first. And, mm-hmm. you know, one of the neat things about Sally is she really used it in very good ways to promote STEM education and space exploration and, you know, the stuff that she was really interested mm-hmm. in.
Well, and in order to promote, she also created the Office of Exploration, which did some long-range planning within NASA.
Yes. Yeah, she was the first kind of the founding director mm-hmm. of the Office of Space Exploration in 1986. At the same time, she was, after the Challenger space shuttle exploded, she was on the investigation team trying to figure out what went wrong and make sure it never happened again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she also did the second shuttle explosion. She was the only person on both of those. That one, did you do this, Laurent, also? When that one happened, part of the explosion was right over this area, and they asked everybody to go out into their yards and look for any pieces that had fallen, and it turned out nothing was found in Dallas.
Nothing was found in Dallas,
but in Plano,
but a big chunk of it was found in my dad's yard.
Oh,
and he lives in Nacogdoches, which is East Texas. Mm. Tam, just to let you know.
Oh. Yeah.
So it covered a good part of Texas. Way over in East Texas, there was a part of it in his yard.
Yeah.
And he said it was funny because he said when they told you if you found something, to call. And he called and he says they were out there quick.
Hmm.
And with the hazmat, picking that up. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. Her involvement in that, though, what was impressive was there was this engineer who had already warned about the O-rings, and this is on the first explosion on the Challenger, and Sally embraced him. She wasn't the type of person who was going to say, who was going to do any kind of cover up at all.
That's exactly right. She, and actually, you know, hugging people she didn't know very well was very uncharacteristic of Sally, but she really felt proud of. His name was actually Roger Bosley, I believe. And she was just so proud of him for standing his ground and telling the truth that she, you know, she just walked up to him and gave him a big hug. And I think he really appreciated it because some of his colleagues sort of shunned him for, you know, being a tattletale. But boy.
And we've seen more recently whistleblowers not listened to and gone after. So he was really taking his own career and putting it on the line by revealing this information.
Yep. It was a very, very brave move that Sally completely appreciated.
Now, she had flown on the Challenger twice. Did she feel like, you know, that could have been me easily?
You know, I never heard Sally say that, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it crossed all the astronauts' minds that, it, you know, it's just by chance that nothing happened to them. But it was really, you know, it was very heartbreaking for Sally because, you know, she lost her friends. And also it was heartbreaking to her that it could have been avoided, that it was sort of the culture of NASA and, you know, not listening to the engineers saying that the O-rings, the rubber, only worked in certain temperatures and that was way too cold to launch. But, you know, these human errors and you know, Sally kind of got into that whole thing about human behavior and error analysis, human error analysis with companies and government agencies. And it's very common. You have to really make sure that kind of the quality controls are in place to make sure, you know, if you're making toys or space shuttles or whatever it is, to just make sure that everything works well and it's safe and you're using the right materials under the right conditions and so on. Kind of interesting.
We need to take a break. We're talking to Tam O'Shaughnessy. Her new book is Sally Ride, A Photobiography of America's Pioneering Woman in Space. I'm Dave Taffet here with Laurent Landis. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
I'm Christina from the ONs,
and I listen to Lambda Weekly
on 89.3 KNON FM. See you later.
And this is Lambda Weekly. We're talking to Tam O'Shaughnessy. She is Tammy Ride. Tammy Ride. Okay, let's start over and just read across one line instead of letting my dyslexia kick in here. Tam O'Shaughnessy is Sally Ride's partner. Sally, of course, passed away. It's just about 3 years, right?
That's right. A little over 3 years.
Yeah.
There's a picture on in the book that I really love. Is Sally? She's looks like she's at an event at the Girls Club of America, and looks like a little young girl is coming up with to speak with her. So anyway, but Sally looks like she's just gleaming. And if you, I just wondering if you could talk a little bit about her, how she wanted to continue the legacy with girls in science.
Yeah, sure, and you know that is it's a beautiful picture of the young girl and Sally, and you know kind of what you'll notice in many of the pictures is that Sally is smiling and just kind of this open, happy human being, and that's really what she was like. What happened, you know, after well, first of all, you know, Sally loved physics and studied physics. As an undergraduate and then in graduate school, and she really thought of herself as a physicist, you know, a hardcore scientist, and she just loved it. And after she flew in space for the first time in June 1983, she started giving talks around the country, and a lot of the talks were to schools and school children. And, you know, she just started almost paying attention to science education, math education in our country and how well American kids did or didn't do and just kind of some of the issues. And then when we became a couple in 1985, I was teaching biology, and so I was sort of noticing many of the same things, and we would talk about it. And, you know, Sally just, she really wanted to use her celebrity to further causes that she had a passion for. And, you know, science is just is something she loved from the time she was a young girl. Mm-hmm. And so she got more and more involved in science advocacy and improving science education around the country. We started writing children's science books because we noticed we love going to bookstores. And we just noticed that oftentimes the nonfiction science part of the children's section is really slim compared mm-hmm. to the fiction section. And anyway, we started writing children's science books that, and we tried to make sure that they were very engaging and also accurate. And then and Sally became part of sort of, you know, national committees and advising presidents on STEM education. Mm-hmm. And we thought it was very important, you know, really for all students, not just the gifted students or the students that already have a natural interest and keep that interest in math and science. But today, you know, our world is increasingly dependent on math and science, and really all students need a good, solid background in those areas, no matter what they choose to do as a career. Anyway, it kind of all culminated in the year 2000 when we started our own company with some friends.
And what's the name of the company?
The first name of the company was Imaginary Lines, because we thought that was so romantic. Mm-hmm. You know, the imaginary mm-hmm. lines of between men and women, between countries, longitude and latitude. And then we very quickly, we almost instantly got the advice from our advisors and angel investors, you know, what are you doing? You know, it costs millions of dollars to promote a new name. Why don't you use the name Sally Ride? So we changed, we actually did business as and then changed our name to Sally Ride Science. So,
and it's a great name. I mean, because the name
is instantly recognizable.
But the name means exploration and space.
Right,
and
right.
It does. Yeah.
And it means equity, and it means integrity. Mm-hmm. All the stuff was part of who Sally was and her national reputation. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, we were kind of like, oh, yeah, I guess we should change the name. And Sally, you know, that was the first time Sally used her celebrity in such a big way. Mm-hmm. But just, once we started the company, you know, I cannot tell you how hard she worked to promote it and to work with corporate America to have them, you know, support and fund our teacher training and our science books and all the different things that we did. It was a great experience, and the company's actually still going strong mm-hmm. out in San Diego. And I'm I've been the CEO the last 2 years, mm-hmm. so I've taken over Sally's role,
yeah.
sort of.
Well, but the name is still there. That name still means integrity, and it means science. So is your work banned in Texas, or has the Texas legislature not quite had time to take up that particular issue?
The Texas legislature, yeah.
Yeah, well, because we don't believe in science here in Texas, even though NASA's based here.
Something a little screwy down there, but you know what? Teachers and students love Sally Ride, and they love Sally Ride Science mm-hmm. and our teacher training and books and our other programs. So many, many teachers and students and parents work with us, mm-hmm. even in Texas.
Even in Texas. That's good to know. That really gives me, you know. You talk about how Sally loved to talk to kids because they would ask the questions that everybody else was, except for me, was afraid to ask. Well, Laurent knows. He's laughing because he knows that,
it's
yeah,
true.
If there's an inappropriate question, I'll ask it. But kids will ask those questions, and she loved answering them.
Yes, yeah. She just, you know, she loved kids because they, as you said, you know, that they're just are more open, and they don't censor what they think or say, and you know, that's a lot of fun. And Sally was very capable of answering any question or skirting a question if she needed to or wanted to.
One of the questions that I've seen the answer to, but it's answered so clearly by Sally in your book, is how do you go to the bathroom in space?
Yeah, I actually agree with you, and that really is Sally's answer, and it's like it's so precise, and you can imagine floating and having to hold the cup up next to your body and the whole thing, and making sure that the vacuum is on to create a little suction, and it's a great description.
It's a great question.
It's
very logical.
But it's not one that most people would ask,
right.
But kids do.
Kids will.
Yeah. Just because, and part of the answer is the vacuum simulates gravity,
right.
Which makes sense.
It does.
Yeah. The other question that I liked was, well, is it hard to eat in space? Because you don't even think about it. Normally you're eating and the food goes down is the way we describe it. But I guess you wouldn't have a problem if you're hanging upside down on Earth and your body just adjusts to weightlessness and the food does go down. But there are forces within your body
that are helping it go down,
that help it and direct the food to the right place. It's not gravity really doing that.
Yeah.
But who thinks of those things? It's a great question. Yeah. I love questions that kids ask like that.
Yeah. So. Some kid who wondered about it.
Well, and kids will ask those things. One of the things that you did with Sally Ride Science is you published a number of books. What were some of those books on? What inspired particular books that you've written for kids?
Great question. The first series of books that we created was on science careers. And, the reason is that so many boys and girls, first of all, kids naturally love science and they're curious and all that great stuff that we want. And then something starts to happen to them, and it's many things in upper elementary school, middle school, and it sometimes continues. And what we learned from the national studies and the research is that much of it is the stereotypes and the bias in our society. And so it turns out that more girls and students of color drift away from science and math than other kids. And what is missing in our culture is kind of diverse role models. And so that if you're a kid and you're in fifth grade and you like math or you like engineering or whatever, and you're watching TV or you're looking through your textbook and you never see an adult working in STEM who looks like you or comes from your background, it doesn't really discourage you, but it doesn't encourage you. And so we decided to create STEM career books. We call them Cool Careers in Math, Cool Careers in Physics, Cool Careers in Environmental Science, 12 different books, and each of them profiles 12 different men and women working in science or math or engineering today. Mm-hmm. And they're hugely popular. And then we actually created teacher training around those books, too.
Mm-hmm. Because a lot of what happens in schools is that kids just get automatically tracked in certain ways. It's assumed that boys will be more interested in science than girls. I don't know why.
Same thing with math. I don't know why.
Yeah. What is it about math that boy's mind would be more interested in it? You would think, if anything, boys can't sit still to solve a problem, and girls would.
And the funny thing is, I've had two math tutors. They were fabulous, and they both were women.
Yeah. I mean, most of my math teachers were women.
Yeah, so I don't know where that came from.
So isn't that odd? But kids are just naturally tracked that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's the stereotypes in our culture. And, parents absorb those stereotypes as they're growing up, and then you become a parent, and they continue sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what the literature shows is, you know, boys and girls do well. Any kid will do well in math and science, given the opportunity and the encouragement. And so it's just, you know, encourage them, and they love the stuff and excel at it. There really are no differences or no.
And you know something, in my family, just thinking about it, as you're saying that, what you're encouraged to do is the opposite of what everybody in my family does, which Laurent will know. Oh, yeah, that sounds like David. Because my grandmother went to college and then got married and never worked. But that was in the 19-teens. And when my mother went to college, it was expected she would go to be a teacher or a nurse or something like that. My mother became a scientist. She actually, you know, and was never out there as a role model or anything, but her lab assistant was Jonas Salk, who went on, and she had been doing research on polio, and he went on and worked on the polio vaccine. And then she encouraged me. I remember in high school, we were from New York. My mother wanted me to go to Bronx Science. I wanted to go to the high school for the performing arts. And I ended up just going to the regular high school. And I was writing a lot, even when I was a teenager. And it's like, you'll never be able to do anything with that. You really need to go into science. And so in my family, it's whatever your parents don't want you to do that you end up doing.
So you do the opposite.
So I do the opposite. So your books, I guess, well, maybe a book would encourage me, but somebody telling me what I should be doing doesn't work. But with most kids, I guess it does.
Right. Well, obviously, Sally has encouraged and inspired a lot of young ladies to follow in the scientific world. Does Sally ever talk about any of her role models, whether they're male or female?
Yes. You know, and some of them are in the book. But I want to say one thing, though, that is, you know, I think Sally and our company and myself, you know, we really want to encourage kids to have a solid background in math and science, and then whatever they do with it, mm-hmm. because there's, and that's part of the beauty of knowing math and science, is that you don't necessarily have to be a scientist. You might be a writer,
right.
or you might be mm-hmm. a science illustrator, or whatever. You know, I know one mathematician who's actually a choreographer, and he uses the geometry in his dances, and mm-hmm. it's so. You can do anything with it. But back to Laurent's question, you know, Sally was, she really respected Neil Armstrong. She just thought he was such a lovely human being and did good with his celebrity. Mm-hmm. So Neil Armstrong was one of her heroes for sure. Hmm. She also loved Sandy Koufax, the pitcher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was a Dodger fan from the time she was about 8 years old, and it, you know, it stayed with her whole life. Mm-hmm. And I would say also in sports, you know, Billie Jean King was a big influence on both Sally and mm-hmm. I. And so Billie Jean for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, interestingly, when, you know, Billie Jean was always an inspiration and a hero for us. But at the same time, because of the horror that Billie Jean went through when she was kind of forced out of the closet back in the early, I think it was 1980s,
mm-hmm.
you know, that really, that frightened Sally a lot.
I bet.
You know, yeah. So anyway.
And Sally ended up actually marrying.
She did. She married a fellow astronaut, Stephen Hawley. They were, you know, she met him when she became an astronaut, and they became very good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it turned romantic, and they got married in 1982. They remained good friends the rest of their lives. Well, he's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to say that properly. But Sally remained friends with Steve the rest of her life.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, I think Sally, I think she was gay. So
mm-hmm.
when we, you know, we were friends from the time we were 12 and 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
I want to hear that story. And I want to give you time to tell it. So why don't we take our break? This is our last break. We'll take a break, and when we come back, you'll tell us about how you met.
Okay.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with LaRon Landis, and we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
Hi, this is Patty Fink, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
You know, when we do things wrong here at KNON, we're so used to blaming the equipment. And do you know what the problem is? Everything works. And I'm not used to that. So, like, all the buttons on our new board that's twice as big as the old one, they all work. And so sometimes you kind of push a wrong button, think you're turning something off, and we're actually turning it on. This is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with LaRon Landis. Patty will be back with us next week. Our guest this week is Tam O'Shaughnessy. She's the founder and CEO of Sally Ride Science. Her new book is Sally Ride, a photobiography of America's pioneering woman in space. She was also a former tennis pro who competed at Wimbledon and was a U.S. Doubles champion. Tam, tell us about, and the reason I'm putting that in right now, that has to do with your originally meeting Sally.
It's very true. It's just a wonderful friendship that Sally and I had for, almost 50 years. But when we were both kids, we both grew up in Southern California. We both got introduced to tennis by our mothers, and we just both loved that sport. So we started playing the little junior tennis tournaments each weekend and throughout the summer, kind of all over California. So I met Sally at, a little junior tennis tournament when I was 12 and she was 13. And we stayed friends through our teenage years and early adult years. And then when Sally was at Stanford studying physics, and then applying to the astronaut corps, I was off in Atlanta, Georgia, actually studying biology. But Sally invited me to her first launch, and I didn't get to see her because they were quarantined, but I went to her launch, and then, it was so exciting and so much fun. Mm-hmm. And actually, it never crossed my mind to be scared, but that was pre-Challenger disaster.
Right,
so.
Right.
After she became, this... very famous person, she started giving talks around the country, and Sally would always, and she was married to Steve Hawley mm-hmm. at the time, and she would always pick cities where her friends lived, and so she would come to Atlanta a lot, and we reestablished our friendship, and then it just sort of like one day, when she came to Atlanta, we'd go to movies, we'd go out to eat, we'd always take walks and talk and just have fun. Mm-hmm. But this one day in the spring of 1985, we went for a long walk, we got some food, then we went back to my house, and there was just this one moment when I looked, we were both sitting on the couch, and I had this older cocker spaniel, and I bent over to pet Annie, the cocker spaniel, because we had been gone for quite a while walking and eating out. And when I looked back, I just saw this look of love in Sally's eyes, and my heart skipped a beat, and I couldn't believe it. And then I realized that I was feeling the same way, that I was absolutely attracted to her and in love with her. And we were together from that moment on until she passed away in July 2012.
She was already divorced at the time, or no?
No, she was not.
She was not. Okay.
But shortly after Sally and I were together romantically, about 5 or 6 months after, she realized that it was serious, and we talked about it, and she... when she went back to Houston, she talked to Steve, and she was not completely honest with him mm-hmm. about us. He didn't mention me, but she did tell him that she no longer wanted to be married and, that they should both kind of move on with their lives. So she did that, you know, probably the end of 1985, and then it just took a while for them to do the paperwork, and sure. they were divorced in 1987.
Mm. Okay. Now, I mentioned you were a former tennis pro. Yeah. How did that happen? You went pretty far. Why didn't you stick with it?
Yeah. You know, what happened is that, you know, in the juniors, I was quite a good junior tennis player in Southern California and also nationally. Mm-hmm. And then it was right when the women's professional tennis circuit was starting. So Billie Jean actually coached me for many years when I was a kid. And then, you know, she helped. There was a group of people that were just, they had vision, they wanted equity for women in sports and especially tennis. And so but it was really Billie Jean's leadership, and because she was such a great tennis player, it really helped pull everything together. But the women's tennis circuit started, and shortly thereafter, the Women's Tennis Association. And so I was playing junior tennis, and I just wanted to experience playing the pros. And so I joined the circuit, and I played on it about, you know, almost 4 years. And it was a wonderful time to be a pro in tennis, because it was a very close-knit community. You know, we practiced together. We ate dinner together, many of us. And, you know, the issues of gay or straight were just like, no big deal. It was a wonderful community back then.
And gay and straight had nothing to do with playing tennis anyway, so.
Correct.
The way it should be, so. But you're saying it like, so, you know, I played for 4 years, but you were U.S. doubles champion 1 year.
Well, a hard court, you know, not like the U.S. Open.
Oh, okay.
Grand Slam. Mm-hmm. Championship, but I'm very proud of what I did. Mm-hmm. But in comparison to Billie Jean or Chris Evert, you know, it was pretty good, but it wasn't at their level for sure.
Ah, okay, and then you decided from there. How did you decide to change careers completely, going into science?
You know, I always wanted to go to college, and I loved kind of nature and ecology and biology. And then, quite frankly, you know, when I couldn't be as good as I wanted to be in tennis, and I think part of it, you know, when you're coached by Billie Jean King, you know, my view of being a champion was of the highest level. Mm-hmm. So it was a little hard to settle for anything less.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Anyway, I really wanted to go to college, and so I stopped playing competitive tennis in the summer of 1974, and actually went to work near Stanford, and Sally and I reconnected as friends then. I went to work for Billie Jean and her husband Larry's company. Mm-hmm. And it was in publishing, which ended up helping me later in life with Sally and my books and our company.
Hmm. And that's an interesting connection, because when you think of, well, we're going to start this company to encourage kids to go into science, it's like, oh, yeah, that'll make a lot of money. which is why you have absolutely no competition and have done so well.
I wanted to switch back. I'm looking at some of these pictures, and they're amazing, by the way. Who are these? Just from her personal stash of pictures that you have published?
Yes, you know, Sally was a great saver, and so were her parents and her grandparents. And so, you know, at our home, there were photographs, and you know, Sally saved her all of her NASA cards. She mm-hmm. saved notes. She wrote to NASA asking for an application. She saved the telegram saying that you have been accepted. Congratulations, you're an astronaut. And it was just, you know, like a treasure trove of memorabilia. So,
absolutely.
And then I also worked there and Sally's mother, Joyce, to have them find some great photos of Sally when she was, you know, a baby and mm-hmm. very, very young. I didn't have all of those. And so most of the stuff I had just in the boxes that Sally saved at our home.
Mm-hmm. And one of the pictures is, I guess, at the liftoff. And this is it's a picture of a bank sign. And it says what they put up on the and it says, ride, Sally, ride, and you guys can tag along, too. I love that because it kind of puts her first. And did she ever talk about what it was like being the only gal amongst all those guys?
Yeah, you know, it was she loved those guys, and they all had to train together. You know, some of them were rookies like her, and so she had gone through the early astronaut training with them, learning to fly and water survival and all that stuff. And then they trained together for a year for the mission. So they were all very close, very good friends. So she, you know, the pictures of her and the videos of her during her first space flight, I mean, she is smiling. She is happy. They are having a good time. Mm-hmm. They get along great. Mm-hmm. So. And she remained good friends with especially John Fabian and Rick Houck, two of her space shuttle mates.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and also talking to what LaRon is saying, I'm your age, Tam. LaRon pretends he's much younger. at the time, though, at the time, you know, after the first landing on the moon and then the second, they weren't even broadcasting it much. It was a mention on the news. But when Sally went up the first time, that was something new and exciting, and everybody was excited to watch her go up.
Yep.
So
yeah, I mean, it was one of those historic moments, kind mm-hmm. of like Armstrong, you know, jumping off the ladder and taking the first step on the moon.
Right.
It was just, yeah, a great moment.
You know, and one of the things that struck me in the book that LaRon was talking about before, she saved all of her notifications, so she actually got a telegram. I would imagine most people don't even know now what a telegram looked like.
I know.
Who, can you imagine? Yeah, that was our fast way of communicating that NASA, that's sending people to the moon, is sending a telegram. I just started laughing when I saw that.
Telegrams, the first texting.
Yeah.
You probably get like a text message saying, you know, hey, you're an astronaut. You've been selected.
Right.
Right.
But but when you go to the Houston Space Center, have you ever been, LaRon?
Oh, yeah. I remember I grew up in Houston.
Okay. So anybody listening here in Dallas, if you haven't been to NASA in Houston, there are some wonderful exhibits.
There really
are.
But
one of the things that's so interesting is there's an Apollo capsule sitting there, and the computer power of that first Apollo that went up was approximately the amount of computing capacity that a pocket calculator has.
Yes.
So the astronauts themselves had to have much more ability to do the science and the math themselves while they were in space. Did Sally ever talk about any of that?
She certainly talked about, you know, what, yes, and not I can't think of an example of kind of what you're describing, but, well, I can't think of an example.
Oh, okay.
The Apollo 13 movie with Tom Hanks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
she loved that movie. We used to watch it, you know, once a year, and,
really?
And she would just say, you know, we are lucky. We never had to perform as much and do as much as the Apollo astronauts. It was mm-hmm. just a much more, it was the early effort at space flight.
Did she ever have any desire to go to the moon?
Oh, God, she would have gone to the moon. She would have signed up for a mission to Mars, even if it took 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Just, she would have done that.
Wow. it'd be amazing to see her reaction of the news that just came out last week with Mars, that they have found flowing water. So.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, she was, when John Glenn went back up on the shuttle, you know, she would love to mm-hmm. experience that, would have signed up for anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. After she retired from NASA, And the reason that you say in the book that she did is because after the Challenger, she knew space flights were put off for a while and her chances of going back up into space, it was going to be a while before she would be chosen again.
Right.
She did some other things with NASA after she retired. Like we mentioned earlier, she created the Office of Exploration, which is the long-term planning office. She also worked with EarthCam, which is now called Sally Ride EarthCam. Tell us a little bit about what that is.
Sure. That is a wonderful program that Sally was just talking with some of her colleagues at JSC, and this is when she was a professor at UCSD. So it was probably like around 1994, 1995, and she was just talking to some of her colleagues and telling them about, you know, when she gave talks to kids, how much they loved her photographs looking back at Earth from the space shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of had this aha moment, which was like, why don't we use space as a way to inspire kids to keep studying math and science? And so she came up with the idea of putting a camera on the space shuttle, and at first they called it KidSat, for kids satellite, and then it got changed to EarthCam.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, then NASA renamed it in Sally's honor after she died to Sally Ride EarthCam. But mm-hmm. It was really Sally's idea. It was her program. And our company, Sally Ride Science, we ran it for the life of it, 16 years, and then the 4 years before that were run, it was run by Sally and our colleague Karen Flammer at the University of California, San Diego. They created a kind of a mission control at UCSD,
mm-hmm.
And classrooms around the world with middle school, high school students would learn about longitude and latitude and figure out what image of Earth, the rainforest, the volcano, whatever they wanted, and then they'd send the commands via a website to our mission control, and then it would get relayed to JSC and then up space shuttle, and now it's the cameras on the International Space Station.
Mm-hmm. And just so that everybody understands, this was in the 90s, long before Google Maps, long before
right.
Google Earth.
Yeah,
that has to be where they got their idea from.
Maybe so.
And they turned it into a multi-million dollar business. So,
yeah,
I know. we're almost out of time. After Sally died, you were given in her name the Medal of Honor by the president. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Yeah, that was a remarkable experience. Mm-hmm. Actually, I had a little bit of a hard time containing myself. I was just so moved by President Obama and the words that were said about Sally while I was standing next to the president. You know, there's media all around me. Hillary Clinton's 2 feet in front of me with Chelsea. And, it was quite an atmosphere. But it was really, I cherished that memory because I felt so much love by the other recipients, from Gloria Steinem to Arturo Sandoval, mm-hmm. the great musician, mm-hmm. and it was just remarkable.
Yeah.
It was just so bittersweet because I wish Sally had been alive to receive it herself.
Right. We are out of time. Thank you so much. Tam O'Shaughnessy,
so
the new book is Sally Ride, A Photobiography of America's Pioneering Woman in Space. Is it out yet?
It is out.
It is out. Okay. And you can get it not in a bookstore in Dallas because we don't have any of those anymore, but Amazon or wherever you get books now. Thank you, Tam, so much. We enjoyed the hour.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, and Laurent. All right, take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
And we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly next week. Our guest is Kevin Jennings, the founder of GLSEN.